Welcome back, my friends, to another episode of the Dental Marketing Secrets Podcast, where our whole goal is to provide actionable tips, tactics, strategy, so that you can grow your practice, serve more patients, and leave a greater impact on the world. And my name is Mark Thackeray. Nice to meet you if we haven't met before. If we have, welcome back. So excited to have you back on the show listening with us today. Today is episode number 80. We are continuing our series on the popular book, Traction, Get a Grip on Your Business by Gino Wickman. And this is, like I mentioned, it's very popular, especially in the dental industry. A lot of practices, a lot of organizations have adopted this approach, this framework, this entrepreneurial operating system is what Wickman calls it, the EOS system. And it's really neat. I mean, it's designed to address, you know, finding, hiring, retaining the right team members. It's designed to help out with, to help solve the problems of, you know, this unpredictable production or revenue where it's going up and down all the time. It's also geared to help you make better decisions, to help solve that challenge of or inability to make decisions or make the right decisions, as well as just implementing on all these decisions that you're making. So it's really neat because I'm working through this whole process myself with my team. And so it's fun. It's fun to be able to report on my progress, but also share this whole approach with you all. This is something to give a little bit of background in case you haven't listened to episode number 79, the first part of this series. The EOS framework came about through hours and hours of working with leadership teams from all over the world. Decades of experience that Wickman brings to the table doing this coaching, facilitating, training, and it's culminated in this framework and is now it's used by tens of thousands of companies that are using this. And as I mentioned before, it's very popular in our industry, in the dental industry, and with good reason. You know, there's a lot of practices that have found good results, a lot of organizations that have found a lot more clarity in how they do this. And as I've gone through this book, there's a couple of things that I feel like, you know, my personal thought on his approach on this EOS framework is that it's designed to, I've noticed it dramatically reduces your business related frustrations. And it comes out of that comes from having more clarity, taking the time to truly define what your organization is all about, define what you are, what you aren't. And that just frees up so much time and deliberation on should we do this, should we do that, right? It makes it so much easier to make those decisions and come to those decisions more quickly. It also has helped me better understand how I can develop my employees so that they can embrace the vision that I have. Because quite honestly, I haven't been great about communicating that vision, or at least I know that they don't have the same level of conversion. Can I use that word? Conversion to that vision. And so this has been a great tool in providing me with tools to share and articulate that vision to them so that they can feel more involved. They can start to demonstrate more accountability and more ownership in our organization. It's also neat because it helps you establish the foundation so that you can scale up. You know, you can go and grow as big as you want without breaking the system. I think that's a challenge for a lot of practices, but also a lot of small businesses like myself, where you have this system set up, kind of de facto system that you've pieced together through the years. And yes, it does work. But if you were to try and grow your business significantly or substantially in a short amount of time, chances are all the pieces would come tumbling down. You know what I'm saying? Just because it hasn't been strategically thought out. And this EOS framework helps you do that in a structured approach. Before I get too more into it, I wanted to share our sponsor message. I wanted to let you know that for this series, this three-part series on the book Traction, SPP Dental Partners, that's Saving Private Practice Dental Partners, is giving away a free copy of the book. Super cool. Now you have a chance to just to go through the book itself, which is a lot easier in my opinion. It's nice to listen to these episodes and they're helpful. But if you're actually trying to apply this, grab the book And then so you can go review section by section these what you need to do, all the action steps with your team. So all you need to do is go to sppdental.com/traction. That's sppdental.com/traction. Fill out the form and you'll get a notification saying, yep, got your order. We'll send this out to you in the next couple of days and it'll show up on your doorstep. God bless Amazon for all the great work that they're doing. But it's just a nice gift from our sponsor, SPP Dental Partners. So excited to be able to offer this for you guys so you can start to really apply these principles more effectively with your practice. So today we're going to be talking a little bit about, so there's six parts to the EOS framework, this entrepreneurial operating system framework. There's vision, data, process, traction, issues, and people. Today I'm going to focus on two of them. Vision and people. There's so much in there that I was going to break it off three and three, but I just thought, let's do vision and people. All of these components are important, but I feel strongly that these two are especially important. And we'll get into why in just a sec. But last time we talked about just this ability to, or the necessity rather, to make a decision to change. You know, a lot of us want to grow. A lot of us want to get better. We want to have a better lifestyle, a better work-life balance when it comes to owning our business, owning our practice. We don't want to let it run our lives. You know, too often we just get going 100 miles an hour and we let our schedule dictate what we're doing instead of the other way around. Instead of us saying, no, we need to work. I want to be conscious of, I want this more, this time, or much more time in my schedule for family or for personal interests or friends or whatever the case may be. I want to design my life instead of just having my life run by my practice or my business. So that's one of the decisions you have to make. And in order to do that, there's some work involved with that. And so this is what the EOS framework helps you do, is helps you address these challenges, you know, and help you design a much better structure for your practice and for your business. And we're going to start with this vision component. Okay. So the vision component, and I wanted to kick this off really with a cool little anecdote about Walt Disney, because when I think of Disney, I think of someone who had, and Walt Disney in particular, but Disney as an organization, I think of such a unique and clear vision. You know, I think of them delivering an extraordinary, like it's an unbelievable customer experience for all those who attend their resorts and things like that. It's just the idea of magic, like it's like it almost feels real in that customer experience because it's so far above and beyond what you would expect from a company, right? And this little anecdote goes to show the importance of vision. So there was this tour group showing off all the resorts. You know, they're down in Florida and going around showing you've got Magic Kingdom, you've got the Animal Kingdom, you've got Hollywood Studios, Universal Studios, Hollywood's in California, but Universal Studios, you've got all these different theme parks and just the sheer magnitude and the attention to detail as this tour group was going around really struck one individual. And he's like, man, it's such a shame that Disney didn't live long enough to see this come to fruition. And the tour guy stopped him and said, actually, it's because Disney saw this, that this is all here today. And I love that little interchange because that's the reality of it. Because Walt Disney had such a detailed and imaginative vision for what this company become, and that's what laid the foundation so that all these things could happen. And because a lot of people don't realize that, you know, he announced what he called the Florida Project to the press in 1965, only to pass away a year later from lung cancer. He died in 1966. And it wasn't until 1971 that things like Magic Kingdom opened, the Palm and Magnolia golf courses, the Disney Polynesian Village, Fort Wilderness, all those things opened in 1971. So he didn't actually live to see the real buildings or anything like that, but it's because he had that such a profound vision for where he was going that all those things became a reality. And that's, you know, when we're talking about vision, one of the big mistakes that a lot of people have is that not everyone in your practice or your organization shares that same vision. You know, in Disney's case, they're an excellent example of when people do share that vision, because you're able to do so many more things, right? You're able to do really anything that you want, you know, anything that you set your mind to. And you know, there's a great quote that his name is Patrick Lencioni, and this comes from the book, but he said, if you could get all the people in an organization rowing in the same direction, you could dominate any industry in any market against any competition at any time, right? What a powerful statement. And I think it's true. You know, once you have everyone on board pulling and rowing in that same direction, there's no telling where you can go. And Disney is such a fantastic example of that. For any of you who have been down to their resorts, especially in Florida. But I had a close friend. She was talking about her personal experience, and she was down there in the fireworks, and she had her kids there. And one of the workers was walking by, "Oh, did you enjoy the show?" And all that, was asking her about her experience. And she said, "You know, yeah, it was great. It was great. The only problem was where we were sitting, you couldn't see the full show, the full firework display, because it was blocked by this particular tree branch or something like that." And lo and behold, the next morning the next night, they returned back to watch the fireworks again, and the tree branch was gone. Like they had been cut and removed or shaped in such a way that it was no longer causing an issue. And I was talking to my friend, because I was like, oh, that's just so Disney, right? You know, and that's, again, that's the power of having the right vision, is it can help you determine what actions to take, you know, for your customers, for your team, et cetera, et cetera. So what is vision? You know, and if we get down to the definition, it's essentially defining who and what your organization is, where it's going, and how it's going to get there. And Wickman lays out 8 questions to help you design and refine your vision. And these questions are, I'll list them out here. I'm not going to spend time on each one of these individually, just for the sake of time. But just so you know what they are, here are the questions. What are your core values? What is your core focus? What is your 10-year target? What is your marketing strategy? What is your 3-year picture? What is your 1-year plan? What are your quarterly rocks, as he calls them? And what are your issues? Excuse me. So those questions, those 8 questions, I'm going to focus on 2 of those in this episode. The rest you can go through in the book. Again, grab that free copy while you can. But I want to focus on core values and core focus. So core values, at first blush, when I saw this, I was like, I honestly just wanted to skip this section, because it just seems so overdone, right? It's overhyped. It's cliched. There's just, everyone's doing it. Like, it's just, they're a bunch of platitudes, right? That don't mean anything. Like, you pick any six core values and throw them up on the wall and, you know, check off the list, but it doesn't really do anything. That was my perception. But as I got down into it, into the steps, I realized it was a whole lot more than just that. In fact, it was one of the most revelatory moments for me that I've had so far going through this process. But let's look at what our core values are. So they're a set of timeless guiding principles for your company. They're vital, timeless guiding principles for your company. They help define your culture, and they help define who you truly are as people, as a group of people. And they're typically between 3 to 7 values, is what Wickman encourages. Ours ended up being 3. I have 3 currently right now. But once you define what those are, you can then use those to hire, to fire, to review, to reward, to recognize all your people based on those values. And that's how you build a thriving culture around you, where everyone's kind of bought into that system, where everyone, again, it's helping to shape that vision and share that vision for everyone on the team. And Wickman points out that, and I found this to be true, you know, your core values are already present in your business. You just need to unearth what those are. You know, you're being led by those values right now, but which ones are they? Which ones are the ones that are most unique to you and the most that drive your practice in the right direction? So he gives an exercise that you can do with your team to help generate ideas on what your core values could be. And essentially it goes like this. So you look at, okay, you list out three people, ideally in your practice, but I know, recognize that some practices are small enough. You may need to go outside of that, but three people that if you could clone, that would lead to total market domination. You know, like, oh man, if I had three of these people, if I could just get more of those people, we would be unstoppable, right? And then you go over as a team, go over all those names that you wrote down, those three names that each of you wrote down, list them on the board, and then start to rattle off and identify the characteristics that make those people so unique and so dynamic, right? List them out on the board so all of you can see. And then it's just a matter of discussion. Like, you're going through those traits. And, you know, if in my case, you know, I had about 30 different values that I felt strongly about. Some were similar to each other. So we had, you know, just slight variations of one. And so we ended up merging those, deciding which one felt more right, and would merge those and cross the other one off. And then through the process of review, you know, we'd start to identify, okay, this one, not so much as I thought initially. And so you're going through this process of elimination. But while I was going through that, I kept having this thought crop up, which is, you know, what do you want your company to be known for? You know, what do you want people to say about your organization? And that really helped me and my team, as we went through this discussion, going back and forth. There was a few that, you know, I feel like the first one was easy enough for all of us to decide on. The second one came after a while. The third one took a little bit of time. And so this doesn't have to be a one, you know, one singular session to get this done, but it can be a series. It really probably should be a series. And I think Wickman actually encourages that too, if I'm not mistaken. I think he says, you know, put together a rough draft essentially and sleep on it for a while and let your mind kind of work on those. And then come back together and see if that's really the direction you want to go or if you need to make some changes. So after, you know, in my case, I'll share our experience. After narrowing down our list and after going through discussion, lots of debates, I have my notebook with me right here that we went through. Let me just go back to the right page. But we had about 30 different values listed to start. And ultimately, we decided on the following three core values. We have a pack mentality, relentless determination, and imaginative. And what's interesting, just a little backstory. So for those of you that don't know, our company logo is a wolf. And so I kind of played on, you know, that was one of the things that went into our discussion was, hey, what are some characteristics? I did some research on what are some characteristics of a wolf, you know, what are wolves known for, and kind of wove this into some of our core values to keep that kind of symbolism and theme, and it just bring that to life a little bit more. And it actually worked out quite well. But so we decided on pack mentality, and then we elaborated on that to come up with the following statement, essentially defining pack mentality. So collaborative, team oriented, for the benefit of the group, both internal team and client, not seeking to elevate ourselves over one another, but to elevate the whole. When you partner with our company, you receive the support of the entire pack. So that's pack mentality. And then the next one is relentless determination, which is constant pursuit of goals and the ability to keep trying despite the outcome, steady and persistent effort. And then imaginative, the flexibility to see alternative solutions to challenges, a willingness to try new approaches, and open our mindset to discover what else is possible. So that was what we came up with for our three core values. And I'm still open to maybe adding one more. I don't necessarily want to add a whole long list because I want to keep it simple. But like I mentioned before, this was a huge momentous accomplishment for our organization, because it provided so much more clarity for why we do what we do. You know, plus not only that, now I have more tools, more of a structure. So when I evaluate my team members, I can base their efforts on those core values. You know, are their decisions aligning with these three core values? And then I can make changes. I can teach and coach based on those if they're not. So that's, it was, like I mentioned, it was just a really eye-opening experience. And I wholeheartedly encourage you to do that as you go through this. The next one that I wanted to focus on for this episode is core focus. Now, core focus is often referred to as, you know, a mission statement. Dan Sullivan calls it your unique ability, or a vision statement is commonly used out there as well. But essentially, it's your company's core and what you should stay laser focused on moving forward. And Wickman shares this story that I'd heard before. It's called Acres of Diamonds, that I wanted to read real quick. But he said, there once was a man named Ali who owned a large farm with orchards. Ali was perfectly content with his lot in life until one day when a local priest told him how the Almighty had created diamonds and how one stone the size of his thumb was worth enough to purchase an entire country. As the story goes, Ali went to bed a poor man. He sold his farm and set out to seek a fortune in diamonds. After years of searching all over Palestine and Europe and not finding a single diamond, he ended up penniless. In a fit of despair, he threw himself into the raging tide and drowned. Soon afterward, the purchaser of Ali's farm was visited by the same priest that told Ali about the diamonds. The priest noticed a small diamond on the mantelpiece and asked, "Where did you find this?" To which the man replied, "There's a brook that runs through our farm, and it's full of them." And his point in sharing this was that most people are sitting on acres of diamonds. You know, they're sitting on their own diamond mine. And the surest way, he says, the surest way to lose your diamond mine is to get bored, become overambitious, or start thinking that the grass is greener on the other side. Find your focus, stick to it, and devote your time and resources to excelling at it. And I've seen that a lot over the course of my career, is seeing, you know, people that get distracted. And I've fallen for this trap too, where you think, you know, the grass is greener somewhere else. The grass is greener in a different industry. The grass is greener by, you know, for these practitioners that are providing this X and X service, right? It's so easy to get distracted by that and lose focus of what you have already, you know, I mean, you've already built this great practice around, and now you're thinking about jeopardizing that by focusing on something else. But your core focus, once defined properly, can help you keep rowing in the right direction. It helps you to avoid getting distracted. I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I see this a lot with different practices, is that they get tempted to introduce new services that don't necessarily align with what their core business is all about. You know, I think Botox for some of them, it makes sense. I totally get that. But for others, they just see the potential, or the quote unquote potential, of adding a service like Botox and adding the production that comes with that. And they get so infatuated with that it draws them off course and takes them away from their core focus. And it just ends up being this long process where they're like, in the end, why did I do that? You know, it really didn't pan out like I thought it was. And I've seen that too in my experience, where clients have approached me about starting this or that side business with them. And at first you see the opportunity and you're like, oh man, a new revenue stream. Oh, that sounds awesome. But after more, you know, consideration, you realize that, man, that just falls outside of your scope of business. And it's taking you more away from what you do and what you do well. And so keep that in mind as you're trying to determine your core focus. And here are two questions that can help you define what your core focus is. So question number one, why does your practice exist? What is its purpose? What is its cause? What are you passionate about? Like, what is that motivating reason? Like, oh, this is why I got into it, because I want to help these people. You know, for some, it's like, oh, I just had such a terrible experience as a patient in the past that I wanted to make dentistry comfortable. I wanted to make it a relaxing, as unstressful as possible. Like that's what drives them, you know? Why does your practice exist? Define your purpose, define your cause, define your passion. The second question is, what is your practice's niche? Okay. What direction, where are you focusing on? Okay. And then work as a team until you agree on what your core focus is. It's going to be short and sweet. So don't overthink it. This is one thing that, you know, I ended up doing when I was going through this. I just kept, thinking of this long drawn out focus, and it should be short and to the point. Mine eventually, over variation, lots of iterations, came to be multiplying your marketing capabilities. It's only four words, multiplying your marketing capabilities. That essentially is what we are all about, where we partner with people, we help them expand what they're able to do from a marketing standpoint, and really give them the tools and capability and direction to do much more because of that. So keep it simple, focus on why your practice exists, what your passion is, and what your niche is. Okay, in this case, ours is marketing, so that's why that was our niche. So that's vision. Okay, you got all that? Hopefully. It's a lot. I know it's a lot. And that's why you should definitely get the book, because you can go through it on your own and go through it on your own time too, because each of these sections takes time, right? I'm sharing two sections in the matter of, 30, 40 minutes, when in reality, it takes hours to go through this. So grab a copy of your book, and then you can go work on it on your own timetable. The next component is the people component. And again, this is one that I feel strongly about, because people are truly one of our greatest assets. And ultimately, this section is all about getting the right people in the right seats. And as a leader, I found that managing people is arguably one of the most difficult responsibilities you ever have to deal with. I think not everyone's the same, but I think for most people, it is one of their greatest challenges. It's also a source of great satisfaction, of great pride when you manage to do that successfully. But it's absolutely essential that you do, that you figure this out, because like I mentioned before, people are your greatest assets. So let's define first, what does the term right seat actually mean? And it means that each employee, and I like this description. This came from a business coach called Dan Sullivan. He's someone that I followed. He's written a number of books with usually co-authors and with someone else, but Who Not How is a fantastic one, one of my favorites that's sitting on my shelf. And he's got a number of different ones, but he calls this your unique ability. And it essentially means that each employee is operating within his or her area of greatest skill and passion. And he kind of describes it this way. So when you're operating in your unique ability, your skill is easily noticed by those who value it. There's people that just, man, you are just good at that. Like you're better than most people at that particular skill. And because of that, you it comes a little bit more naturally to you probably. And as a result, you experience this opportunity for ongoing improvement. Like it's never ending, because one, you're good at it. So that makes you feel good by doing something that you're good at. But it also comes to you fairly quickly or fairly easily. And so you're like, oh, cool. Let's just keep going. Let's see how far I can go with that. And because of all that too, as a result, you feel more energized when you're doing that particular skill. You're not drained out or anything like that. And last of all, and most importantly too, you actually have a passion for that. And so that it presses you, it motivates you to go further in that area than others might. You know, it's kind of like your own personal focus. So you're this own, one of your unique talents, your unique ability, call it whatever you want, but it's that zone that you operate in where you're not stressing about it. Like it does come fairly naturally. You're good at it. It gets noticed, something that gets noticed by others. And it's easy to learn more because you understand it, right? I mean, you kind of understand it intuitively. So when we're talking about getting the right people in the right seats, you first have to have the right structure, right? One of the common mistakes out there is to allow or even unknowingly create a structure that accommodates people that you like, but don't you like them and don't want to lose them, but they may not be the best fit for your business or your practice. Okay, so sometimes this means eliminating or changing seats that are no longer relevant. Sorry, I've got printer going. wife's in the other room doing this, so don't worry about that. But sometimes we allow that mistake to happen by perpetuating a system that isn't helping us long term. It's not serving the company, and we're doing it just because we like these people. We don't want to lose them. But in order to build a system that's really does serve your organization long term, you need to sometimes do the difficult part of eliminating, changing seats that are no longer relevant. Sometimes that you just have to make that decision. And some of the, just to give you an idea, there's two types of issues that you're going to face more often than not regarding people moving forward. One is the right person in the wrong seat, and the other is the wrong person in the right seat. So let's talk about right person, wrong seat. This is essentially the result of someone who's maybe been promoted to a seat that's too big for them. Someone who possibly has outgrown a seat that's too small, you know, and they're like, oh, been there, done that, kind of maybe a little bit jaded, or has been someone who's been in a position that does not, it just doesn't utilize their unique ability. So typically, more often than not, we see this with someone who's been around for a long time. Everyone likes them, you know, they have good rapport and they're a great person to have around. But they're just, yeah, like I said, they've either outgrown their responsibilities or their responsibilities are too big for them. And so they're not able to perform or generate the results that you're wanting. But your job as a leader is to pull that person out of that particular seat and instead identify one that's right for them and their unique ability. One where they can just, it gives them a greater chance of success. It allows them to contribute more significantly to the team as a whole. So, and sometimes the seat's not available. You know, I mean, when there's not a seat available like that, you got to make a hard decision. And most likely that decision is going to be to let them go. And it is hard. It sucks, you know, but it's one of those things that's going to be good for your practice long-term. It's going to be good for that person long-term. Ultimately, those people want to find their own, you know, find that position that where they can utilize that unique ability. Because again, it's less stress on their part. They're actually doing something that they're good at. So they're more likely to excel. They're more likely to go deeper and press farther in that particular field. And as a result, they're going to more likely to get rewarded for it, you know, and be valued for that. So if that means, you know, unfortunately, that can sometimes mean letting them go now so that they can hopefully go find that position later on. All right, so that's right person, wrong seat. Let's talk about wrong person, right seat. And in this case, this is where the person, you know, they really do excel at what they're doing because it's the right seat for them. They're productive. They're operating in his or her unique ability. But what makes them the wrong person is that they don't share your core values. And when I first read this, on the surface, it just doesn't seem like that's a big deal. Okay, you're like, well, okay, but they're the right person. You know, again, it's kind of core values like I was talking about. Like, they're just core values. But it's underlying everything you're building is what it's doing. It's killing your practice in the long run. It's chipping away at what you're trying to build. You know, it's pulling out those bricks off the wall that you worked 12 months to assemble. Like, you spent all that time building that up carefully, strategically, going over your core values, your core focus. And that person's just like giving them the bird. You know, it's like, whatever. Like, that doesn't mean anything to me. I'm just going to do it my way. And that eats away, you know, it's like decay. It eats away at the culture. It eats away at your team. And for the sake of your team, you must let that person go. Again, it's like in the other scenario. In the end, it will be better off for both. There's a number of other things in the people component that Wickman talks about, one of which is the people, he calls it the people analyzer. And it's a great tool to be able to look at your team members and see how they stack up. You know, how are they performing? You know, and it's a very simple process. He's got you know, you've got your core values on top, and then you've got each employee name in each row. And so you just, it's just a chart, just a sheet you can use to look at, are they, how do they perform based on this value? And it's a quick visual to see, is this the right person? Like, are they in the right, is this the right person and the right seat? Right person, wrong seat, wrong person, right seat. Just to give you an easy to look at way to do that. He also, so that's a simple tool. You can see it in the book. He also gives a three strike rule for, you know, just to allow people to, because you want to notify people when they're not consistent, not congruent with your core values, not consistent with responsibilities. You want to give them the opportunity to correct that. And so he employs this three strike rule that works as follows. So strike one, you discuss the issues and your expectations with a person. You give him or her 30 days to correct the problem. That's strike one. Hey, you let them know where they went wrong. You've got 30 days to correct it. Cool. Strike two, if you don't see improvement, you have another discussion with them to go over everything, make sure that it was clear, there weren't any questions, and give them another 30 days to correct the problem. And then strike three, if you still don't see improvement after that, so that's 60 days, right? Where they haven't been, they've been notified of the problem, they haven't corrected it, then you need to take action. And that's when termination happens. And he says, all of the right people in your practice or in your organization will thank you for it and wonder why on earth it took you so long. So simple, again, another simple tool that you can use to help manage your team, help make sure that they are the right people in the right seats. So that's all I'm going to go into on the people component. There's so much to each of these, you guys. I wish I could spend time with all of these, but I don't want to make this a 16-hour series. So for the sake of time, I'm just going to share those two. Again, we've got the vision framework, you've got the people framework, Last, I'll just say, again, go grab your free copy of the book. Go to sppdental.com/traction. Grab your copy. Start going through this. And then you can come back and listen to these episodes too. It's going to make even more sense as you're working through the book as well. So that's it for today, my friends. Thank you so much for joining me. Excited to finish off this series and go over the last components of the EOS framework next time. So, and also too, if you wouldn't mind, if you've enjoyed the episode or if you've enjoyed past episodes, please leave a review for this podcast, wherever you listen to this podcast. So that would be a huge help for me. It helps the search engines know that, hey, I'm doing a good job. People actually like this. They find it useful and helps other people find it and listen to it as well. So huge thanks from me for that. But until next time, my friends, be good and we will talk to you soon.